This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We listen to Awesome God by Rich Mullins, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
My butthole's tingling all the time!
Do you think you can make God laugh?
No, bitch.
Dr. Anthony Fauci.
You're a clown if you say fuck.
I'm a Christian wife.
Sicario.
I'm a Christian wife.
White women are notoriously shifty.
I'm a Christian wife.
You should be upset that I had a laugh with her!
Clean up on aisle butt.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm legally blonde.
I'm legally...
Oh boy. I'm Caroline.
And we're here to have some good Christian fun. That, of course, is a clip from Legally Blonde, the musical, a high school production of it, in which a young performer suffered a severe voice crack, which is one of the best things I've ever seen on YouTube. And
it's a tough note. You know, she tried to be professional. She kept going, and that's the show going on.
The show must go on, and she did the work, and she's still here. So we're not here to make fun of that. We're here to honor her.
Make fun of Kevin's hair.
Hey, what about it? Because it's too long now? Because it's been like 7 months?
Tell me, like, what, with this swoop you did today, like, what you were...
trying to accomplish. Wait, what swoop? It's the same old, same old.
It's like combed today in like a, you know, intentional way.
It's slightly combed because I took a shower midday rather than the morning.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's just a little humid.
Do I look like a better person or a worse person when it looks more intentional, my haircut?
I don't know. The listeners will have to give you some feedback.
And they will.
Good but as Christian a co-host, fun I don't know.
Is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the movies, the music, and the entertainment made for and made by Christian, but as we'll find out today, enjoyed by all. Literally everyone can enjoy this equally. No one feels alienated by
accessible
it.
Song. Mm-hmm.
Fully accessible, fully applicable in all of our lives. But we're not here to make fun of you. Or to make you go to church. We're not here to evangelize or to proselytize. We're just here to proselytize, if you will, and say, like, what is our trauma from our upbringing, if you may. So the topic for today, nice. We're doing one single song. We're doing Awesome God by Rich Mullins.
Yeah.
Thanks
for the votes on Patreon.
Yes, this was a choice that was made by you, the listener. Our elder board on Patreon took a vote. This creamed the competition. This had more than like 60%, 70% of the vote out of 4 choices. Overwhelmingly, people wanted to hear us talk about this song. And so we're doing mm-hmm. that today. We're finally doing it today. Rich Mullins, the composer of the following guest intro that we're going to play for you right now. As we introduce our very special guest for the episode, friends and folks, he's a comedian, he's a writer. You may know him from Desus and Marrow, or his podcast Make My Day, or for being the biggest sweetie on Twitter. Give it the hell up for Josh
Gondelman!
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome
hey,
to
thanks
the show.
For being here.
Thank you.
Welcome.
What an epic intro.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. It's so great. It's great when the guest actually has enough credits that it can last the whole intro. Wait, I don't mean that's a slide on other guests.
Damn.
But you know, when there's like 3 things instead of like
you
one
you know,
thing.
When your intro is sparse, you're going to get to hear more music, so that's a positive in some ways, you know?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's a give and take. There's trade-offs on both sides, on many sides. So
I've enough accomplishments to take me from the side of the stage to the middle of the stage during an announcement. That's all you need. After that, it's just gilding the lily, right?
Yeah.
After
just
three
gravy.
Things, it's like, all right, knock it off. We get it. You're old.
One thing, it's like, oh, good for him. Two things, it's like, all right, oh, that's kind of intimidating. Three things is like, okay. Four things is like, shut up. Yeah,
what are you compensating for? Four things? Okay.
Four things.
All right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Two, you know? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You like can't choose.
If I had accomplished four things in my life, I would only tell them two to cite me for.
Yeah.
Leave them wanting more. That's the first rule of intros.
Yeah. That's just like my resume right out of college. It was like, well, I was captain of the taco club, and I also am good at chess, and I had an internship or two.
Caroline, you're leaving out one very important point on that resume. Freaking Outdoor Voices. What was it called?
Outdoor Voices.
That's the,
yeah, the yoga.
That's
brand.
The yoga company. Caroline was part of an acapella company called what?
Random Voices, and you better believe that was on my resume for a real long time.
Really?
Random Voices in it for 1 year.
Nice.
What did you think the relevance would be?
I don't know. I guess it just showed like, huh. Kind of interesting, you know, like, wow, this girl has talents that don't apply to this job.
Well, you were applying for a job where you were teaching the staff of Mexican restaurants to play chess through song as like a team building activity, right?
Exactly.
I love that.
Well,
that's
what I wanted to prompt the employer to think of just like, this is untapped, you know, like, how do we bring her on board?
I mean, there are plenty of jobs that require singing, like Cold Stone Creamery. To be a creamer there, you have to sing for your tips. A depraved exercise. Like
I taught preschool. There was a lot of singing at that job.
Oh my gosh, wow. Yes. Yeah. If
oh my
I were
gosh.
Teaching preschool, that would be important.
What a great countenance and persona for a preschool
Absolutely.
Teacher. I'm sure.
Josh, on that note, do you have any message for the educators out there that might be listening for the teachers?
I'm so sorry that this is happening to you. I've never like, so when I, every year when I was teaching, I like loved my time in the classroom. My co-teachers were amazing. I worked with the same teacher in a classroom for like 3.5 years while I was teaching full time. She was the best, Krista.
Damn, that's like a roommate at that point.
Yeah, it was the best. She was so cool. And like we had a bunch of other people kind of rotate through over the years. The best. But every year in September, I would get a little bit of like, okay, back to school. Like when you're a kid where you're like, oh, I'm excited to see my friends, but I'm like, it's like back to the regular rhythm of things. And I would get a little glum at the beginning of September, especially because I was already doing comedy. And I was like, well, another year that like I'm doing this day job and not quite like living the dream. That's literally what the phrase I used. And then once I started working at full time, you know, in writer's rooms and stuff, it like went away a little bit. That feeling of like September doldrums, and this year it's the least I've ever had. Like I've never had like, oh, thank God I'm not teaching anymore. Yeah. And this year it just feels so. And I don't mean to be flippant.
Crazy
it just seems like
relief.
Such a challenge for teachers and parents and teachers who are parents and kids. And it's just like, man, I just hope that people are like being easy on each other. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And not just like. Just like, God damn it, you didn't do math? Like, today? It's like, yeah, there's not going to be math. There's only 8 years left in the world. I don't have to count higher than eight.
Exactly, yeah. It's like diminishing how much I need to count or learn or know.
Sorry, I've taken the Lord's name in vain so many times already.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, no, speaking of counting, I am keeping track of that.
Okay, that's how many twice times. So
and
far.
Three strikes.
As is the Lord herself. Imagine if I were just that guy, okay. So aggressive about it.
And we actually love that, and we stand.
You love it.
I do like that.
No, we flip the gender all the time. And actually, that's not wrong. I mean, no, I've gone to...
It isn't... No, I just feel like to be the guy that does it like so pointedly, like thank goddess for this meal we're about to eat. And it's like, hey, man, you can just say it. You don't have to let us know that you know that we know.
Right. Or it starts to get confusing. Like it's like in God, she trusts. Or it's like, no, that's not the... I don't think you're familiar with the phrase,
you can
my
still
guy.
Say, we is very gender neutral.
You would think.
I pledge allegiance to the Mother Lord.
All right, sure.
Like, wait, America is a woman? What are we doing here? Right. I think you're right, though. I appreciate your saying so because I do think it is like the idea of like, a god of any gender is like a very beautiful idea.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I think too, that's something that's been important to us. And I think for a lot of people who have gone on some sort of deconstruction path or a reconstruction of like, take gender out of it, take mad dad cloud dude out of it. And then like, and especially as you become more aware of gender fluidity as a scientific concept too, like how beautiful those things can be when applied to a theological idea, especially if it's helpful, and especially like if not applying them contributes to a bad, okay, well, if I think God is like my dad, then I think anytime I hear from him, he's butt dialing me, you know? And so like, not to be too specific as an example.
Not a personal.
God's just kind of like, do you know how to reset my cable box? Yeah. Okay.
Wait, what's your HBO Go login? Okay, Father.
So how's class going?
Omniscient? You're supposed to know.
You should at least know the security question answers at least.
I see it increasingly, the kind of like mindfulness about gendered language in Judaism, just like the kind, because there are certain things that translate really intuitively. And then there are certain things that like, excuse me, I think some people do more skillfully than others. Like there's replacing like Lord, our God, like Adonai for like sovereign of the universe, like that kind of like non-gendered terms of royalty. And you're like, oh yeah, I guess there we need like that catch-all. And then it's like, where are we going they? Are we going he or she? And it's just like interesting to see the kind of like where people settle and where people feel comfortable and like what feels good to people to change. Because I think when I was a kid, it was very like dude God, right? Like you got the like he Lord our God, King of the universe, like that kind of stuff. Like those were the like gendered nouns. Even when you're not talking he or she, you hear king and you're like, oh right, but do we just switch it to queen? And then that's where you get like ruler of the universe. And it's like cool. I think that grappling is really cool.
Yeah, it's so funny now that even you're explaining that, I like hadn't considered for a really long time that Lord is a term for royalty and like a and why are we even still using like all these monarchy terms,
right? Isn't that address in itself kind of wacky?
It would be like if the Christian religion emerged in a different time frame, you would say, dear Jesus, my president, my prime minister. Yeah. Like, oh okay,
you
like
Senator, Holy Spirit, I'm thanking you today for actually it might be actually more neutral to use president and senator for
yeah,
God.
Yeah, that's true.
Sure. Lord or King.
Prime Minister God.
Oh, absolutely. Deputy Governor God. Well, Josh, we would love to hear more about your upbringing in I assume Judaism, but maybe you,
in
you
Judaism.
Dabbled
yeah,
in,
yeah, yeah.
in some other stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I grew up, Jewish around a lot of Catholics. Like the town that I grew up in was not, there wasn't a super dense Jewish population. Mm-hmm. So I had friends when I was a kid. I grew up in a synagogue that was conservative at the time. That's like the form of Judaism, not like political conservatism.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
It's just like a more observant strain. And now is kind of reconstructionist, which is, I don't know like how much you'd like me to.
As much as you want,
like that.
BRT.
Sure.
Some days I do, and some days I mostly don't.
Thank you. I feel very comfortable. but yeah, conservative Judaism is like below Orthodox Judaism, but like still fairly observant. And then Reconstructionist is more like it's about the vibes and the, yeah, exactly. It's like a more, I mean, that's kind of where I feel as a person. I feel like as an adult, I've grown into a more Beastie Boys Jew. But like as a kid, I was, that's kind of where we grew up. My parents weren't super observant, but like the year my sister and I respectively, or the years separately, we got bar mitzvahed and bat mitzvahed, we would go every Friday night and Saturday morning to services. And Jewish services, I didn't go to like any kind of Christian church service growing up. Like just, you know, it didn't come up. Like I would do like some kind of occasionally like a Christmas party at a friend's house, but like no strict by the book canonical religious stuff. And I went to like Easter vigil mass in high school with a friend, which was really cool, but it was like an hour and I was like, man, you're in and you're out. The conservative Jewish services were like an hour and a half Friday night and then like 2.5 hours on Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. And it was, and it's a lot in Hebrew, which I learned to read but not understand. That's like,
oh,
yeah.
No.
So I knew a few words, but it was mostly phonetic. Like, it was like, my experience with Hebrew, Judaism through Hebrew, was like when you go to a country and you like sound out the things you need to say.
Yeah.
But if you didn't know, if you were just like, oh, I have to say a prayer, so, and then you're like, I'll just do it phonetically. I would read ahead a lot in the prayer book in the Siddur, because there were like, in the back, there were like English passages that were like instructive or like historical, but it was a lot of Holocaust back there, so it was a rough read.
Oh boy. Yeah.
They put it in the book. They're like, after that happened, they're like, we're teaching this in synagogue.
That's crazy. I mean, I understand it too, but it is funny to think like if we had a special Bible at Christian church that just had, I don't know, whenever Christians were persecuted, probably back in Roman times, just telling you the story.
Actually,
of that as
Caroline,
well.
The time that Christians were most persecuted is
the year 2020.
2020. Yes.
Yeah. No. No. That's true. And, yeah. And they're updating. They're doing a new edition for that.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Just a Bible that's fully like. That's just fully about like the Christian persecution, like, you know,
exactly.
Kirk Cameron isn't in any of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's
no,
censorship,
that
actually.
Specifically is censorship, absolutely.
You're suppressing our stories. Mm-hmm. So when you were at these like synagogue services and you were reading through, were you like able to follow along because you were reading what they were saying, or it was just like, I'm lost here, so I'm going to read whatever is in front of me.
So it bounces back and forth Hebrew to English a lot. So it's not like the masses that were like just in Latin.
Yeah.
Like it goes, so you do some Hebrew and then some English, and then sometimes it would be like duplicative. Like you would read the Hebrew and then the English of the same thing. And then some stuff you'd be like, oh, this one's just in English. I don't know who made those decisions. I think it's honestly, it's like rabbi to rabbi. They take a lot of liberties. They kind of make it their own. Yeah. Which is cool. I mean, like we also, not to brag, but we had several rabbis when
damn.
I was
growing
up. Okay. Not at once. Not at once.
It was like a whole boy band of rabbis. That's a cute one. That's one that's going to break out to his own solo rabbi career.
So you had like lot of different experiences.
They're called high five. Yeah. We got
high five.
We did. I got a lot of different perspectives over the years. Like when I was young, we had kind of an older, like well-established, kind of beloved by the older community in the synagogue rabbi. And then we had a female rabbi for a number of years, and then a man who was he was Southern Baptist and was Southern Baptist, converted to Judaism, was and still is gay, and he was our rabbi for a while, and it was just like you got a bunch of different takes on Judaism from people coming from different perspectives. Not like week to week, but like year after year, as this kind of long tenured rabbi had left, and then they were looking for like a longer term replacement, or you know, people wanted to stay, people wanted to just do part time. You know, it's like it's so interesting to me to think of that as like a job. Because it is.
Yeah, like working a shift at the temple feels
right,
funny.
Right.
Yeah, and
we're like, what are the
out.
Hours here? I'm like really working on my my work-life balance.
Was there anyone in particular, either of those rabbis or just other teachers you had, that were like, that made an impact on you or like formed your thoughts around like what Judaism was for you?
Oh man, that's such a great question. I also was going to Hebrew school, I didn't mention at the time. So my Hebrew school teachers, and that was a lot of like, it was the Hebrew language to read and like to understand, you know, a little bit, but like the stuff you're learning, the words you need to talk in the world are like not the words in the Old Testament. So there was not a ton of crossover there. But I'm trying to think of impressions that I made. Man, I was like a bad bar mitzvah student too. And I had a friend who was really good. Uh-huh. And we're like still in touch. We were the same age, and we had our bar mitzvahs a couple of months apart, and I just remember like you have to chant this long portion, the haftarah, that is like all in Hebrew, and there are like these specific they're called treps, and they're like the notes that you sing and mm-hmm. the kind of like patterns of like up and down vocal intonation, and I was so bad at them. And I remember like truly when I being 13 and being up on the bima in front of like friends and family and just feeling like it took like 6 hours to get through the whole thing. God. I'm sure it was like 8 minutes, but I was like, are we, like, I was doing it and I was like, are we still doing this? So I remember being kind of like, I was like kind of like slacking off as a student. But you know what really made an impression was like, and this is kind of what sticks with me today, is like the idea of, in Hebrew, it's tzedakah, or like charity and good works. And I do think that like the idea of Judaism as like service is really something that resonates with me still. I think any faith that brings people to like do service for other people, I think is really special and wonderful. And that's like the part of religion that resonates with me the most. It's like that. And then like reasons to visit my family and my wife's family. Mm-hmm. So those are like those things. But like the idea of, you know, there's the like, the kind of Jewish movement now to undo the like carceral state of like how we treat immigrants. I think like the Never Again is an organization that works on that, and like that kind of stuff is like really impactful to me and like really resonates with both like the religious teachings and the cultural resonance of like, you know, like literally reading a prayer book that mentions the Holocaust and you're like, oh, this is important, like this is a religious teaching of like to like learn about that and like how the worst things people do to each other and like how people should treat each other.
Yeah, that's so profound too, because I think that like a big thing that keeps me like still drawn toward religion or keeps me respectful of it is like what you said of like asking you to step out and perform acts of like generosity or kindness that I think you otherwise wouldn't, even if you are a humanist or someone that cares mm-hmm. about your community or like your people. Like it just takes a lot for most of us to like really sacrifice time or comfort or whatever to like help people, but it that's what the world needs in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
and that's so cool. Totally. that's what like church impressed upon you and like kept you going thinking about.
For sure, that's like my biggest takeaway and the thing that like feels the most valuable to me about Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because and I think you can have that as like a humanist too, right? But like something that organizes you to like do good for others and to, like you said, to sacrifice even more than just to like do something that's like uncomfortable or painful, and to have a community that is like doing that with you for the service of others, I think is like really impressive and wonderful and necessary. Like you said, it's like so much of what needs to happen is just people showing up for their communities, like the mutual aid stuff that's like feels really necessary and really like prominent right now.
Mm-hmm.
That has like a similar feel even without like a religious component, but it's like, okay, we're showing up for our neighbors and we're doing for others with no explicit benefit other than like we're part of this community and it's our job to maintain it.
Yeah, and those religions functioning kind of what you're saying in the best case scenario of Judaism leading to an idea of a life of service, those are hard to find outside of religion. It's possible, but I think it is difficult to find that sometimes in those infrastructures. Like I feel particularly fortunate to know a lot of people super politically engaged here in Los Angeles. So people that work on Nithya Raman's campaign for city council that know so much about the unhoused people in Los Angeles and know so much about the history of the LAPD and the police state and how that affects Black people in our community. Because what that does is it does kind of create a feedback loop of, okay, he's posting about it, which means she's posting about it because she's friends with him. And then I'm seeing it, so I'm posting about it too, and then donating to the same thing and showing up for the same stuff.
Right.
And so like the community is kind of like a patchwork that can happen. But I think I think having experience and having grown up like you have, or like Caroline and I have, in religious communities does gear us up more towards that idea of not even like a circle of shame if you don't participate, but just the idea of like responsibility to a bigger thing that's outside of yourself that you understand to be more important than your own individual needs.
Yeah. And I think, like you were saying, like the people are finding that people come to that through religion, or like have found it through like organizational protest structures, or and that to me feels more aligned, you know, like those, that kind of stuff feels more aligned with like what I love and respect about like people of faith than like even other religious observances sometimes, you know,
totally, because
it's like, yeah.
Well, that's the important part.
Yeah.
It's not about all the rituals. It's like just taking care of each other and like what we, in the earth we have here, you know?
And it's making the quiet part loud in terms of that, which you do for the least of these, you do for me. And that just feels, it feels like it should be common ground of handshake emoji. Everyone can concur to that degree with it.
Yep.
The other thing I wanted to talk about with you too, before we take a break, is in something I'm sure you've gotten a lot of, I know you've gotten a lot of questions about, but just generally what you do in comedy and what you're kind of known for in the community that we alluded to even in our intro is being a very kind man, that it is not by accident. I'm sure a lot of it is by design, giving people pep talks on Twitter all the time when they need them, making it a part of your podcast, Make My Day, where you donate money to the charity of the guest's choice, and then y'all give a pep talk to someone else, and just being known generally as a sort of pretty beloved figure as far as that stuff goes.
Oh, thank you.
I good reputation. So I'm wondering the things that animates, though, other than like, of course, we all want to be nice and kind, but your sort of concerted effort does make it feel like more of a practice. Do you know what I mean? Not inauthentically, but like a practice of like, yeah, I'm sure you have to work at it. So I'd be curious to know like the things that animate that, the choices that led to that becoming so much a part of what you do.
That's such a good question. Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm a pretty like naturally positive person. And I think like the comedy that I do on my own, I think is most successful, not in terms of like industry success but like I think it's most resonant with people when it's like friendly and welcoming. And that was something I like kind of learned over a period of time, just like doing comedy, being like, oh, I can do it like this, like I can just be inviting to people, and that can be how I am on stage and how I am, you know, when I'm hosting a show, and like kind of unlocking that realization, because it wasn't like, it's naturally how I am, but it wasn't necessarily like the only way I ever tried to do comedy, or like a thing I consciously thought about in comedy, until I had done it enough that I was like, oh, it sorts out like this. Like when I think about what works and what I feel good doing, it feels like this. And then once I kind of realized like, oh, I can just be this person I was like, who I am, like when I can just be like a more entertaining version of myself on stage and like in other arenas that are, you know, professional comedy arenas, I was like, oh, this is so nice, because it feels like the lane that I'm in terms of creating stuff, that like it resonates with audiences. It's not what everyone does necessarily. And once I knew that about myself and about like my strengths as like an artist, let's say, it really like helped me clarify like, oh, I can work on stuff that like flows from this, rather than like having to invent like what would be a show that I would host. I'm like, what do I like, what's my point of view on things? And like, it's really so some of it was just like learning through trial and error, like, oh, this works better than when I'm like, you know, oh, this sucks, and like who needs this shit, and like, you know, and a lot of that is sincere. And then there's like the cultivated aspect of like, okay, turning that real perspective and what I think is fun into like work. And then some of it is just like, I feel like I have a pretty fortunate like brain chemistry in that I have not like really struggled with like depression and anxiety more than is like I've had sadness and worry, but to an extent that like, I do feel like this is something that I can offer, is like an emotional openness that doesn't, that I feel like I can offer and doesn't like drain or deplete me. So I feel like if I have that capacity, it's something that's nice to share if it's helpful for people. I hope that answers your question.
That fully answers it. It wasn't too vague. Yeah. Just because it is something that I think gets so easily mythologized in a way of just, oh, this person was always kind of Mr. Rogers and everything was fine and then they had a nice life. But just kind of understanding the actual components that go into that and the series of little decisions, and that it is something that people who are known for these things, and because we talk about virtue so much on this show and the things that, that animate that, people who are known for these things, that there is much intention behind them.
Yeah, I think the intention is really, because I think that's what takes someone from being like a pleasant, likable person to like a person who's doing good, right? Like like you were saying earlier, Caroline, right? Like the idea of like animating that kind of like desire to help, and Kevin, you were saying like to the organizing principle, right? Like it does take effort to go from like, oh, I'm a, not me necessarily, like someone is like a pleasant person to see around versus like, oh, this is a person who like goes out of their way to like recommend people for things or to like to see if somebody needs help with something that they're struggling with. Like you can be a totally super pleasant person, easy to be around, agreeable, without doing those other things. So I tried to be really like, not that I always succeed, but I try to be really like mindful and effortful of like doing more than is, the easier natural thing. When I can.
Yeah. And that is such a salient point that I find that too, that it's not that hard to not be a jerk or to be polite. Yeah. It is hard to have consistent positive impact in people's lives.
Right.
Like the difference between being inoffensive versus positive. Like an actual meaningful difference in someone's life. And that's why we got to be kind to each other, like Ellen says. What's that, Caroline? You let a loud sigh.
I know. I just like... I think this is more reflective of myself and like things I need to work on too, but it just makes me feel like inadequate.
Like, oh, no, get out of here.
Because it sounds like that for Josh, like what you were describing it just sounds like innate. Like this is just naturally comes to you in a lot of ways. And for you, it was just key to realize like, oh, I can do this and still be have the career I want and the relationships I want. And like this function of my personality is unusual. And so I can share it. And also it doesn't take a ton of work for me to like manifest this kind of like, helpfulness and like optimism, I guess, you know,
that's very kind of,
yeah.
You
and I'm sorry, I don't want to make this like an insult about me or whatever, but like, oh man, it is just really hard to like, keep trying to step outside of your own mind and perspective all the time, you know,
for
and
sure.
Like, and care for people, but it's something I would like to do.
The other thing is, so, sorry to like cut you off and like redirect back
at
me.
Not at all. Please, back to you.
Like a monster would. But it is like an awareness of like a privilege and like a good fortune. And like, I think I'm trying to get better and more generous, like knowing like, oh, I'm okay right now. And like, I'm trying to be really conscious of like the way I move through the world and like the, you know, what three things I've accomplished, and like what
four.
Kind of standing that
we all know
four things, not to brag, four things, what standing that gives me to like be helpful and useful, whether it's like from a, you know, in like a one-on-one sense or speaking out about stuff and feeling like it's not gonna like torpedo my career if I'm like outspoken about things, or like just like, oh, I'm working right now during this quarantine, and so like I should really think about like financial contributions to things as like, oh, I wouldn't, you know, like I wouldn't normally give to this thing, but like people really need it and I'm okay. So like just like being aware of all that, those like kind of like layers of privilege, not to be like, you know, too academic-y about it or whatever.
No,
but
I think,
like,
that's a great point. Yeah, like, if you're hungry all day or have other things, like, it is hard to also be like, okay, how am I organizing for my community today as well? You know, like,
totally.
You just need to have to, you do have to take care of yourself. And then, yeah, if you have these boosts, you can maybe spread it out a little bit.
Yeah, and it feels like a community obligation, both, like, within the community of, like, people we know, like the comedy community, in as much as, you know, that exists in different ways, and then, like, the community that I live in Brooklyn, and then, like, beyond that, just, like, oh, there's so much stuff nationally that, like, we should, that is so distressing and needs so much work.
Like what?
Is there anything you can think of?
I guess theaters being closed.
Yeah, theaters being
closed. Oh, yeah, like AMC.
One.
What Josh is talking about is, like, we need to reopen AMC theaters coast to coast.
Yeah, we need to reopen the AMC theaters full capacity because they lost a lot of money the past few months.
We need them to make that up.
100p. Yeah. That's right.
That's such a beautiful way to put it, Josh, and I appreciate that. And it's, yeah.
That's very good. Well, thanks for sharing your story, man. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time for Singles Ministry. I gotta change this. Or just write a song.
Is this a karaoke track or is it the real one?
No, it's a karaoke track. I ripped it from YouTube, like so many of our segment music things. Singles Ministry, YouTube. This is, of course, a segment on the show, a format on the show we do where we take one song from contemporary Christian music and we devote a little piece of discussion to it. We say whether it deserves a holy roast or a holy toast, in and of itself, does it have merit? Josh, you grew up with Judaism. Did you have any exposure at all to any sort of Christian media at all? I'd be so curious to know what your outsider sort of perspective would be of it.
When I was in elementary school, I had a pretty good friend who... he would lend me these books that I really liked. I think they were vaguely Christian. It was like a kid's adventure series. And I knew he was also like into like Christian pop music. So like Newsboys, is that right?
Oh yeah, baby.
That's the one.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So it was like, that was, so I got some of that through him. And then the rest of it, like it was more specific religious stuff than pop culture. Like it was more like, oh, I knew what a first communion is, but I like didn't know, you know, I wasn't super in the world of like Christian pop culture.
The finer points of VeggieTales or things like that.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very limited VeggieTales exposure.
The finer
that's
points.
I'm sorry for your your hard childhood.
Yeah, that's like when people hear that I never trick-or-treated as a young child for Halloween. Yeah. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Neither did I.
And that is the opposite of vegetables.
Truly, yes. So, you know, who really won here, I guess is what I'm saying. Yes. Well, we expose you to a little bit of Christian music today, and we listened to a song called Awesome God by Rich Mullins.
Classic.
Caroline, you had heard this song before. Had you heard this song before, Josh, anywhere in the culture, even via osmosis?
I've heard people sing it. Like, I knew of the song.
Wow.
And I'd heard the refrain, but I don't think I'd heard this recording of it.
It's got to be, I would imagine, like, hymns aside from the early centuries, it's got to be one of the most popular Christian songs of all time, truly. Like,
it feels like a hymn.
Something pretty and earwormy as well.
Yeah.
Very
as far as the refrain goes. It was written and performed by a man named Rich Mullins, who we've never really talked about in depth on the show. So many of the artists we talk about on the show, Josh, just for context, are clowns in some way.
Yeah, I'd say they wear a big red nose and large shoes and they do silly jokes.
And their songs go honk, honk, honk. And that's kind of the sound. Those are the hooks. They don't have hooks, they have honks. And people like Carmen and Newsboys to a degree. Rich Mullins, just for context sake, was kind of an outlier. He had so much respect in the community. He died a very tragic death, very, very suddenly, in an auto accident in 1997. He was only 40-something at the time, and he lived a pretty quasi-monastic life. Because he did have so much royalties and revenue from his music stuff, he forewent most of it and took the average salary of an American at the time, and then poured the rest into various charities in other communities. Wow. He lived on a Navajo reservation for 2 years and did therapy work with Native Americans for a long time. So there's so many people we talk about on the show. They're like, yeah, they were just a guy in Nashville, or she was just a young girl that had some bops. But he was like trying whatever we think of, and especially even connected to the ideas of service that we were talking about at the beginning of the show. He was pretty much doing that up until his death. He had so much respect from people in the world and in the community. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things about him is that he has gone on record saying it's one of his worst written songs he's ever done is Awesome God.
Really?
There's a quote from him from 1996. He said, you know, the thing I like about Awesome God is that's one of the worst written songs I've ever wrote. It's just poorly crafted. But the thing is that sometimes I think when you become too conscientious about being a songwriter, the message becomes a vehicle for the medium. This is a temptation that I think all songwriters have. I think a great songwriter is someone who is able to take a very meaningful piece of wisdom or a folly or whatever and say it in a way that is most likely to make people respond. But what you want them to respond to is not how cleverly you did that. You want them to respond to your message. So he was pretty, self-aware and incisive about the perils of even Christian music as a genre and how compromised
and
most
like
of it.
Songcraft, fascinating.
Yeah, he is a fascinating man. He has much, much respect.
I knew nothing about him.
Yeah,
and the cover of the album that this song
it's
is
amazing.
From is him in front of like a white sheet backdrop, like where you would get a portrait taken, and he's sitting, and he's looking into the camera, but his body is kind of askew, and then there's a dog looking off to the side, kind of perpendicular
to the gaze of
Rich Mullins.
It really makes you wonder, what is the message? You know, like, what am I supposed to know?
Well, the album is called Winds of Heaven, Stuff of Earth. So maybe Rich is the Winds of Heaven and the dog is Stuff of Earth, and that's kind of their dynamic.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I'm surprised you
would be a fun name
the
for a dog.
Sure. What did you say, Caroline?
Stuffy.
I can't believe you made the dog Earth instead of Heaven. Dogs are heavenly or whatever.
Okay. No, I'm not getting into this with you.
The original title for the album was All Dogs Go to Heaven, the music
That's
album.
That's right. And then it conflicted with a similar movie that was coming out at the time.
Yeah. A lot of copyright infringement. Yeah.
So
it was called All Dogs Go to Heaven, All People Are on Earth.
Yeah. Dark.
People
very
live on Earth forever.
Once people die, they stay dead in the ground, buried in the dirt.
He's a specific theology where only dogs go to heaven.
Yeah, I mean, listen, pet salvation was a much debated, that's a whole episode topic right there, Caroline. Pet salvation.
We should talk about that. I would enjoy that.
Where does Caroline's cat Scampi go when she leaves this mortal coil?
Aww.
I have a few ideas.
Sure, hell. Not going to heaven.
Great name for a cat.
Scampi? Yes, especially when you see that thing. Let's take a listen to the song in question. Which, to me, instrumentally at least, kind of strikes me in the opening chords as a bit of a Western, almost. Like a saloon.
Yeah.
There's thunder in his footsteps and lightning in his fists. Our God is an awesome God. And the Lord wasn't joking when he kicked him out of Eden. It wasn't for no reason that he shed his blood. His return is very close, and so you better be believing that our God is an awesome God. Our God is an awesome God.
And just imagine a 7 and 9 year old Kevin and Caroline crying at church camp. The answer is, he is awesome.
I mean, this song is so, like, he's very, Rich Mullins, very, like, effacing about the songwriting, but, like, sonically, it's super effective. It sounds like you were saying, a Western. My first thought was, like, this sounds so 80s, and it sounds like it's from a movie where, like, God comes into town to kick some ass.
Truly, truly, yes.
It seems to be both the message and the sound that we're supposed to understand,
right?
From this.
Because that's what you're saying. It's like, God's coming into town on a motorcycle. He's going to kick the devil right in the neck.
You're gonna take no prisoners, kill all the people.
Yeah,
drown them all in the flood.
Getting a little Carmen core.
Yeah. He'll turn your ass right to salt. And, like, it just is so, it feels like, it really does. It feels like a movie where, like, God is a person who's coming to the world to, like, clean up the streets.
Yes,
he's an Avenger.
The first, yes, Caroline, the metaphor you would perfectly understand. Of, like,
what did
he's
you say?
Like Captain America. Caroline said he's an Avenger.
Sure, a little more of an Iron Man, but yeah, Captain America. Sure, that works.
it's like Chris. It sounds like Christian Roadhouse is, like, what it makes me think of. If Patrick Swayze's character from Roadhouse, like, also read the Bible to the other characters at the bar that he's hired to be. And I don't mean this, like, derogatively. It just sounds like very badass, but very explicitly in the service of a, like, Christian lord.
Yes, because the imagery in the first verse is so cinematic in nature. It feels like a montage of someone going out to shoot a guy where he's like, he's rolling up his sleeves and he's not putting... the Ritz. Maybe the most badass opening lyric of not even a Christian song, but any song.
That lyric
ever.
Is so funny. Putting on the Ritz? Did anyone think God was putting on the Ritz?
Like someone saw God doing this and they're like, oh boy, we got a song and dance number coming.
Oh, yeah.
No.
He's got a 5-course meal coming down.
I guess you have the limitation of, because it is a religious song, you can't be like, God's rolling up his sleeves, he's not fucking around.
Yeah, something I would play okay with children. I mean, there are some, oops, where did I go? I'm back now, baby. Wow, accidentally, I think God didn't like what I was about to say, and he cut my video out.
Kicked your ass.
He smote your Zoom window.
Well, and two, I'm trying to contextually understand what the word awesome meant to the culture in 1988 when this song came out. Because it definitely meant something to us when we were kids. But awesome in this context does feel like the awe and shock and awe of the military operation in Iraq.
Yes.
Where it is, God is awesome, like an overwhelming force that's going to, you know, dominate
scary.
Your... What's that? Yeah, kind of scary. Sure.
Scary.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very Old Testament, right? Like, God is tough and you got to be scared of him. And he'll beat you at pool.
Like, yeah. And all of his... His touch points, if you will, for like demonstrating God's awesomeness are from the Old Testament, except for when he says Jesus dies on the cross. And I always get so uncomfortable when like Protestant Christians invoke like Old Testament God, because it usually is like to them, from their perception, like a warlike God, you know, who wants to just kill like basically a really targeted group of people and is not taking any shit from anybody. There is no forgiveness. There is no context. There's no gray area. It's someone that is, like you said, coming in to not fuck around and kick some ass. And it's just like, it rubs me the wrong way. Like, it's a simplistic understanding of like what God may have been like in that time. And it's also like pro-military, scary, murderous person.
In Judaism, that's kind of the only God that there is the God of the Old Testament in a lot of ways, right? Like, it is the God of the Pentateuch. So it's not, I think maybe it is a Protestant, because we do have such the yin and yang of the meek and mildness of Jesus as a mere image that he feels so insanely powerful and mean in the Old Testament.
We did get a lot of like Old Testament, the kind of like power of God, but I think definitely less scary contemporary God like that. I think there was like with just getting the Old Testament, it definitely felt like, That like, why you got to bring up old shit?
Yeah,
a little bit. God, hey, that look, God did all this stuff, and these are lessons to learn, and like these things transpired or whatever, or you know, or are allegorical. But like, I definitely like didn't grow up fearing God. It was like going to take action against me personally, like the God of this song wants to.
Fully. I want to listen to I want to listen to verse 2 real quick. Back to the west. Sky and the stars in the void of the night. Hey, that's nice. He spoke into the darkness and created the light. That sounds nice as well. That's pretty gentle. Judgment and wrath he poured out on Sodom. The mercy and grace he gave us at the cross. A hope that we have not too quickly forgotten, that our God is an awesome God. Our God. All right.
Woo.
This God is like John Wick, right?
Truly.
Like, he is retired from killing, but he might come back.
For one last job.
His dog got shot in the first 5 minutes. Our God is a John Wick guy. I mean,
yeah, it's
that dog was an awesome dog.
Oh, that reminds me, a friend of mine and I would sing this song about my father, whose name, first name is Todd, and we would just sing, "Our Todd is an awesome dog." We never told him about it, though.
It's so funny, because when I remember singing this like as a kid in church, I probably sang this like thousands of times, this refrain, and I don't remember feeling like afraid. I remember feeling like, yeah, the Hulk is on my team. And
yeah.
Like, this is us.
More Avengers talk, okay.
Yeah, like the... and I'm Black Widow and we can do anything together.
Sure, yeah.
But it feels like this kind of God is only invoked for like revenge or like avenging Christians or whoever, I guess. Or if, like straight up just fear. Like you're just supposed to... not forget that, like, your sweet little Jesus who likes kids and sheep also can fuck it up, you know? And so don't ever get too cozy is kind of how it feels to me, which is just, like, extorting you into worshiping.
Yep, and poured out judgment and wrath on Sodom feels particularly loaded in the year 2020 of our Lord.
Yeah. For sure.
Or of our president.
Yeah.
That feels a bit much. I think it goes without saying that we would maybe all natively, maybe emotionally more resonate with or respond to our God is a gentle God, is a pretty nice God.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
He brings all the chips even though you didn't ask.
He remembers to ask you how your mom's birthday went. Our God is a gentle God.
This song, there's so much, it's so intense, which I like just from like like I said before, a sonic standpoint, I'm like, this song kind of kicks ass. Like, if it were about a character, like, if the lyrics were changed, but the tone remained the same, and it was the theme song from, like a Top Gun-like movie,
yes,
I'd be like, this kind of rules. Like, it's, like, our God is on a highway to the danger zone, is, like, what this is.
To me, it also sounds like a march song, you know? Like, you were about to march on... I don't know, I guess Netflix, because you need to or whatever.
No, I can't do this again today.
Like, this would fit with your steps.
I can't do this.
Talking about this before you got on the call, Carolyn.
Oh, gosh.
It just has like that plotting, like boom, 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 like you're gonna take over, you know?
Which is so atypical of what CCM is, which is why it's so funny that this is one of the biggest hits of all time in CCM.
Yeah. So you see it as atypical? I see it as like
sonically, absolutely, like yes. I don't know if thematically or lyrically it is, but sonically, absolutely. In terms of especially what praise and worship is now, how it does sound like with some warmed over Coldplay leftovers as far as that stuff goes, and the Hillsong United stuff. It is so funny, by the way, because there's so many covers of this. There's so many covers you can find on Spotify, on YouTube. You can find full choreography, full dances, and I think the listener at home who grew up with a lot of this stuff will resonate to going to Vacation Bible School and having motions of like, our God is an awesome God. Yep. Yeah. Like, there's stuff that we all know.
Oh, wow.
Which I think one listener in the comments said, all the listeners of GCF need to take black and white videos of themselves doing the choreography and put it together like an imagined celebrity video.
Oh, that's so funny.
To heal the country and heal the nation. But
I mean, you guys, if you do send that in, Kevin will make it. I would guarantee you that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But
I would love to see it.
But I wonder if one of the reasons that it may be connected to Christians when we were children more is because it just felt like, don't worry, Dad's got it. Like, it truly does feel like, hey, if we get in a fight, Dad will punch out the guy and he won't bother you. And then as an adult, it's like, oh, no, I can take care of myself. It's okay. Yeah. So maybe it feels less like a necessity to have that, you know?
It definitely has that feeling of like someone strong is here to protect you, but also don't forget that you owe him big time.
Yes. Yes, there's that is implicit in the relationship. So maybe if we have nothing else to say about it, maybe it's time to give our rating on it. What do you think, Caroline? What are you giggling about?
Let's do it.
What are you giggling about? You have to say
not
now.
Not putting on the Ritz.
That was explicit. I know. And that sowed a lot of Broadway phobia in many Christian households.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That scene in Young Frankenstein, people would fast forward through that where Peter Boyle is like,
this is not godly.
It's not.
God would not put on the
this
Ritz.
This is the opposite of God.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's give it a holy toast or a holy roast. The way this works, Josh, is we give it a toast or roast. A holy toast is a thumbs up. That's when we say to the song, yeah, 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 yeah. A holy roast, we send it to hell. Holy toast is to heaven. I keep forgetting the heaven and hell of this. Holy toast, we send it to hell. We're roast and toast forever. And we say,
no, 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 no.
Or if we're not sure, we can put it in purgatory, a la
the space between.
D- Dave Matthews, the song The Space Between by Dave Matthews is the perfect example of purgatory. That's such a beautiful choice.
It's not quite this. It's not quite that. Mm-hmm. I hope he's having an okay quarantine. I think about him every day. We'll start with hard. Wouldn't you love a Dave Matthews Band cover of Awesome God, by the way?
They jam out on it.
Caroline's considering it, and she says no.
I don't know if he's going to really bring something to the table.
Springsteen would do okay with it. I feel like this is written in a Springsteenian type voice anyway with some of those.
Yes,
he ain't putting on the Ritz. Come on.
You've got to really stylize it. Like if you're going to cover this.
I think
saxophones.
Yeah. Come on, Clarence. That's like the awesome voice. Like, whoa, it is awesome.
Yeah. And they're like, let's give it up for the real big man. The man upstairs.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, man. Caroline, we'll start with you.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm going to put this in the space between because while I don't really care for the message or the characterization of God, as we discussed, I do think it's an important song to our history. And I feel like the space between...
This is our heritage.
Case, it's going to be like the Library of Congress, Smithsonian place where like it can be studied, it can be referenced, but it is not... needed right now in the culture.
All right. That's a very fair and comprehensive take. We turn it to Josh.
I feel similarly overall. I give the arrangement a huge holy toast. I just feel like it goes so hard. I'm like, when I started and there were these kind of like swirling strings, I was like, this is not what I expected. And then you get to the kind of stomping chorus, the like marching. I'm just like, this is intense. And I have so much appreciation for like the 80s action speak singing verses. But again, like you said, I can't fully the message of it doesn't fully touch me where I live. So that sending
very
it
generous,
to hell feels a little much.
Generous.
But I do feel like I also have to end up in the space between. Although, again, whoever did the percussion arrangements and the vocal mixing, they're
you
in
have
heaven
a place
for sure.
On the right hand of God.
Huge toast. Oh, yeah.
The right hand of God. That's where he keeps his pistol.
He's got an open carry law and two M1A1s.
Oh, God. In every state?
It's in all 50 states.
Yeah, that's
God has an open carry permit in all 50 states is a bumper sticker. I'm terrified is real.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be real now. New drop.
We'll make the merch.
I think also, too, one of the reasons it is so musically interesting is because that was Mullins, too, especially when so much of the radio stuff in CCM, I guess just all radio was cookie cutter at the time. And he did experiment a lot. He did weird hammer dulcimer stuff on his songs. He would do bagpipe stuff. He would do, a lot of different global rhythms and whatnot. So this is just kind of another example of it. And apparently not even one of the best ones, according to him. So I, too, will also put in the space between I don't like mad dad God.
Dad.
I don't like a wrathful father. I want a gentle Chalamet-esque God where it feels like if I hugged him, he would break possibly. So I have to be gentle with him as well as he's gentle with me.
You're kind of the tough guy in the relationship.
Yeah.
Kind of
the Army Hammer.
That's
if we're
right.
taking this super
That's
forward.
Right. Yeah. I'm the Army. Hey, and I'm wearing the shorts for it right now. Call me by your name style. And I did.
Hey, if anybody's going to be putting on the Ritz, it's me. Okay, you leave him alone.
I'm a fancy showman boy. Let me do the dancing and tapping. And
let God read his books by the sea.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let him live.
And I'll wild out on the dance floor. But yeah, that's Awesome God. I'm so glad the elder board picked this song for us. Can't wait to see what they
Great
pick
song.
Next for us. And yes. If you want to, you can go to @ChristianFunPod on Twitter, dear listener. Give it a roast or a toast yourself. So get out there and...
Pokemon go to the polls.
And Corn Pop was a bad dude.
It me.
2020 edition. Oh, Pokemon.
Joe Biden, give us a soundbite. Maybe you'll get a vote.
Now, did you know in 2016, almost 42% of the population of eligible voters did not Pokemon go to the polls? So let's maybe see if that changes in 2020. Because if things...
Oh, a rousing call to action from Kevin.
Hey!
What? How funny.
Kevin,
how
you funny are rocking the vote.
How funny would it be if Joe Biden said that, though? If he was like, you know, in 2016, Senator Hillary Clinton said a very smart and brave thing, and I think it bears repeating today. Pokemon go to the polls.
It's like, we deleted the app years ago, sir.
Amendment to our Constitution.
I know. No, I love a toothless voting endorsement from a, like especially from a celebrity where it's like, we know what you want, and you're just saying like, guys, we gotta vote. Although,
wink.
I have adult friends in my life. I told you this, Caroline. I have adult friends in my life who have not voted and are not sure if they're going to, adult friends who are eligible to vote, who are not sure if they're going to vote in 2020. And it's good to be friends with these people and have loving
civic
relationships
duty.
And try to understand and listen and learn, I think. Is what listen, Josh Gondelman would say, because he's nice. But I won't say that. That person sucks. I'm just kidding.
Cut them out.
All right. It's time to bring it down now into a quieter, more meditative, more worshipful space. Josh, on other podcasts, you may promote yourself. You may promote your projects and plug them. But we're not here to do that. We're here to lift them up to the Lord as a humble and loving sacrifice by plugging them and talking about them and telling people where they can find us. And we'll start this process with Caroline.
I'm so excited about my lift up this week. But first, lift me up at Caroline's Farts. And the lift up this week is a TikTok account called Geodesaurus, Geodesaurus. It's a weird spelling. But it's this woman who is an artist and also just a big fan of lakes. And she lives near Lake Michigan or in the Great Lakes. And she talks about all these amazing facts about the Great Lakes that you don't know. And they're in our country. And I lived in Michigan at some point in my childhood. And it's so, I think maybe I relate to it. But it's an amazing account. It's really beautiful and it's often poetic, but very surprising. And so I'd recommend it.
Lake Talk. Check it out before Twitter or before TikTok is banned in the United States in a few weeks. Is the case? Is that the case?
Oracle is going to keep it. Is going to keep it alive. We're safe.
Hopefully. All right. Thank you, Caroline. We'll turn it to Josh.
I would like to lift up. I've really been enjoying Open Mike Eagle and Prince Paul's podcast, What Had Happened Was. Yeah. Prince Paul is like a legendary hip-hop producer. He's worked with like a million amazing artists. And it's like each episode, I think there's going to be 13 episodes total, and it's a different project he worked on. And it's just very cool. And it's like really fun, eclectic projects that he did over the years. And I've just like loved hearing. I didn't know if I would love hearing someone talk about for an hour about a different like album every week, and it turns out he's great and I do.
Awesome. Yes. And then where can people find you and check out your stuff?
Oh, thank you.
You got a great podcast. Make My Day.
Thank you. Yeah, my podcast, Make My Day, it's a one-on-one comedy game show where the only guest wins every week because they're the only one playing each week. And yeah, watch Desus and Mero on Showtime. And I have a book called Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results.
And follow him at Josh Gondelman. What a great follow.
That's right. Thank you.
Also, the thing I love, especially as someone who also does podcasts about your show, is how guest friendly it is as a proposition of it is a half hour long show. It is such a nice, breezy, fun show. So as a guest, it's like, okay, you don't have to listen to or watch a weird thing. You just show up for half an hour and pick a charity.
Thank you.
It's so great.
I try to make it so easy. I send like a long email before and I'm like, but don't feel like you have to do anything.
Yes.
Just like get ready and we'll just like let it rip.
It's such a nice format. It's such a great show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. You can follow me at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. I'll lift up the greatest film of 2020, Mandy Patinkin's Twitter account. It's incredible. Oh my goodness gracious.
So
what a fun. So it appears that Mandy and his wife and his son are trapped in a cabin somewhere and are just making videos all the live long day. And they are so authentically charming. It is the upside down equivalent of some of those like YouTube families you see doing, you know, Thanksgiving song parodies. It's like the real version of that with Mandy Patinkin as the father, like one of our greatest actors, Broadway performers of all time. And his wife Sarai too. She's so funny. Their son's funny. Check him out at Mandy Patinkin. So we lived him up. And you can follow us at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. You can go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun. Become a part of the Elder Board, a real thing that exists at a lot of churches that does sound like a wizard club, but isn't. It's just
and you can buy your way in, and that's how we have operated our podcast as well.
That's right. Religion and money inextricably entwined forever.
The Podsperity Gospel.
Okay, Josh, don't come in here and make perfect jokes like that.
Oh, man. And then you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And every review you leave, we donate $1 to charity. And this month's charity is Glitz. Josh, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, friend. I think I speak for Caroline, myself, and all the listeners when we say, our Josh is an awesome Josh.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a treat.
Our pod is an awesome pod today. Amen. And there's nothing left to say except for an all pods people said. Amen. Okay, let's go out on a cover version of Awesome God. This is not by Rich Mullins.
Oh boy.
This is from Kirk Franklin, which is quite a dramatic reworking of it. Let's see.
Oh, good. That's what I'm talking about.
Now this doesn't sound as scary. This sounds like a more fun God. Like, hey, cowabunga God. It's more of a cowabunga God.
Kind of a dancing
me.
In the street vibe. You know, like everybody, let's go.
It's so fun. Oh man. All right, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.